My name is Erica Stein.
And I'm Allie French. And this is a podcast about individual journeys within wellness and how to navigate it all.
After Allie experienced a cancer diagnosis in her 20s,
and Erica went through a self-love journey, we created a platform to interview real people from all walks of life that have combined all types of practices. From physical wellness to emotional and spiritual, we hear courageous stories and focus on why it's important to share them.
We are both certified integrative nutrition health coaches, and together with our community, are learning to live our most purposeful lives by sharing one courageous story at a time.
It takes courage to share these journeys, and by talking about them, we aim to destigmatize the process. We want you to be your own health advocate, feel educated and informed on the latest in health and wellness, and empower you to feel your absolute best.
And because we want to bring forth a wide variety of stories, the opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect our own, but we hope the diverse and varied stories will empower you to make the best choices for your own life. So join us as we and our community share our courageous wellness.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Courageous Wellness. We hope everybody is settling into the new year well. Today, we have Ajit Nawalka on the show. He's the founder of EverCoach, and he was one of the co-founders of Mind Valley, and we're going to get into a formal intro with him. We have a really in-depth conversation with him today, especially about self-coaching. And so today we are going to do our normal updates and just kind of do a new year catch up with each other before we get into that. So Erica, what's going on with you?
What's going on with me? Well, why this is a new year catch up for us is because I have been down for the count. I was sick all last week with COVID. So, you know, it's not fun. But it was a lot of hibernation, a lot of reading, a lot of rest, which I know you're going to talk about, like this kind of, we're still in the midst of winter. And so it's really, I'm going to let you talk about that. But this, like, I know there's this whole emphasis on like new year, go, go, go. But we are in the thick of winter. How can we really rest? And I think this episode is really perfect for that because it is all about like self-coaching. And with that, you know, so before I got sick, I was traveling. I was in Florida visiting my in-laws who are over there. And so I've had a lot of time to read. And so actually my update is going to be some content. If you are in like a little bit of a hibernation reading mode, I do have some content updates I am excited to share. So I read two fiction books, non-fantasy, because I know last year I was like in the fantasy hole that I am still in. So there will be future updates about that. But I read two fiction and then one like in the self-help realm. So I read Emily Henry's Happy Place, which I think was Goodreads 2023 book of the year. It is in that genre. It is so good. I had never read Emily Henry's books before, but if you are a fan of like Taylor Jenkins Reid or Leanne Moriarty, it's so, so good. I didn't want it to end. Like when I realized I was at 60%, I was like savoring like the last bit of it. It kind of goes back and forth from like future to the past, which I love. And then of course you catch up and you understand everything that's happening. And it's a story about three college friends spending a weekend together. And it's about relationships and love and friendship and marriage and divorce. And it's just so good. 10 out of 10. I'm also on Goodreads. If anyone is on Goodreads, I'm obsessed with Goodreads now. My friend got me into it. Next book I read was Malibu Rising by Taylor Jenkins Reid. And I had been hovering at 20% for a while. I started it last year and I couldn't finish it. Like I just couldn't get into it. I just couldn't get into it in the beginning.
Even though you really like her as an author.
Even though I like her as an author, I just couldn't get into it in the same way I got into Daisy Jones and Seven Husbands. But once I hit 20%, the 80% flew. It was so good. Unbelievable. I would give it 4 out of 5 stars because it took a little bit longer for me to get into. But it's so good. It's so true. I grew up in Malibu. It's true to old Malibu. I don't know how she like she like knew and picked up on so many nuances of the town. But the story is really good, especially if you're an oldest daughter. It's really about family and siblings, and it's just good. It's so good. And I loved it. And then the self-help one I read, just to wrap it up, was Atomic Habits, which had been on my list for a while and is a recommendation we get quite
all
often,
the
I feel
time
like,
we get
on the
that.
podcast. And I thought it was so good. It's all about like incremental improvements change our lives. And kind of we are the sum, right, of our good habits or our bad habits, right? It's not about being perfect. It's just kind of what we talk about a lot, which is you are what you do most of the time. And so it really reminded me of a lot of things that I believe in. It felt very authentic to like my Buddhist practice and what I believe in, about this concept of human revolution. And it's not just about changing your habits. It's fundamentally changing who you believe you are, you know, and uses a lot of really great examples. But I thought it was an incredibly good read. I really think everyone should read it, especially, again, I know you're going to go into like this new year, we're still in winter kind of mode. But if you are kind of in a soft, which I definitely am, this like, I traveled at the first of the year, I just got sick, so I'm kind of in this like soft new
launch.
year's mode. Yeah, like it's like a soft launch into the new year. I think Atomic Habits, it's only like a couple hundred pages. It's not like a big lengthy read. It was really good. So those are the three books I read when I was sick and on my trip. And yeah, and now I'm going to finish. I'm going to get back into, if you are a fantasy girl like I am, Sarah J. Maas is releasing the third in the Crescent City series, which has to do with the ACOTAR series. So I just finished the ACOTAR series with A Court of Silver Flames, and I'm going to start the Crescent City series. So very excited. Follow me on Goodreads. If you're on Goodreads, just DM us and we can find a way to follow each other. I don't really know how to use it, but
it's really
my
funny.
favorite social media app now. I'm in like groups. God, I just love it. I'm
I
into
didn't even
stickers.
Know about it.
I'll talk about this a different week, but I've like stickered up my Kindle.
It's
I'm in
funny.
It, you guys. Inner child healing. But yes, Allie, I've been kind of teasing what your update is and what we were talking about offline. But
it's
yeah,
just so interesting. I think, you know, it's like you're talking about the winter thing. And I've been sort of like, I don't know, struggling is the right word, but it's sort of been, there's all this emphasis in January to kind of like create fresh things and new goals. And that's great. But I've been feeling more of a pull to be like introspective. Like, what's that word? Just like kind of more internal. Like, I want to rest. I want to like curl up and read. Like, I don't want to just like push back into like, go, 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 work, 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 work. And I'm sure that's internalized like late stage capitalism that my body's fighting against. But really also I've been seeing a lot that like, you know, our seasonal new year is in the spring, right?
March.
It's the spring equinox. And so
astrological new year too.
Yeah.
March.
And so it's like winter is typically a time of hibernation, of, you know, kind of more time inside. But it's interesting because we live in Southern California, where it's sunny most days out of the year. And I go outside most days and it's wonderful and da da da. But I've almost felt like the sun has been oppressive. Like, I know this sounds strange and I'm sure people in the cold are like, what is she talking about? But I'm actually looking at like snow dumps in the Northeast. And maybe it's because I grew up in like a seasonal climate, but where I'm like craving that, like craving snow dumps so that I have a reason to stay inside and like read a book or have a reason to not like go back into the sort of like new year, like new goals kind of thing. And I think it's like we just need to actually give ourselves permission to do things at the pace that we want to. And like here, it's just like, oh, I have to carve that out if it's important to me. Right. And it's hard to do, but I have to do it if I want it. And I don't know. And so it's like, it's something I've been struggling with a little bit. And you and I were saying too, like, isn't it awful to like feel like the upside of getting an illness or getting sick is like, oh, I can just rest. It's like we should be able to do that. We're human beings. Like we need rest, and that's okay. But the internalized struggle is real. Even if we have awareness around it, like it's something that I'm very much aware of and very much sort of like pushing and pulling right now in my life.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I think what you said is like we can start a new year, right? Like we can change our habits, right? We can do anything we want at any time of the year, right?
Yeah.
And I think that carving it out, I know I said the same thing, it's awful, but it's like when you do get sick, you're like, ooh, I get to just hibernate now instead of go, go, go. And you know, it's funny because we're recording this on Monday before the episode comes out because I was sick all last week. We usually record on like Fridays, typically the intro. And it's a holiday, right? It's Martin Luther King Day today. And I was gonna, since I'm feeling better and I've been inside all week, I was like, what can I do, right? Like, what can I do today? Because I have so many things I need to do. I need to take down Christmas. I need to whatever. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to take a few hours this afternoon. I'm going to read. And I like told my husband, I was like, I'm going to take the afternoon to read, you know? And I think it's really important that we do carve that out because especially in California, we're not going to get a snow day. Or even if you have a snow day, you still might be like, I'm going to be on my computer that entire snow day and work, work, work. And there's value in that, but we have to take time to rest. And we are in winter right now so that we can fully emerge in the spring.
Absolutely. So that's something, you know, it's just like my update, your update, we're trying to be more conscious of in little moments when we can to take that for ourselves and to not feel bad about rest. You know, it's important. It's a necessary part of life. And, you know, in this conversation with Ajit, he talks also towards the end of the episode about how he really structures his time and how he's committed to like a 5-hour workday. But he really breaks down how that's happening. And so anyway, that's if anybody's interested in this kind of stuff, towards the end of the episode, you know, we really have a great discussion and he breaks down like, well, what do we really do in a full like workday?
Yeah.
How much of that time is like wasted time too? So anyway, with that, we should probably get into the episode.
Yes, let's do it.
Okay. So today we welcome Ajit Nawalkar to the show. He's the founder of EverCoach and the Dharma Coaching Institute. He is also one of the co-founders of Mind Valley and was previously their CEO. He is a leading voice in the coaching space. Ajit understands that the overwhelming number of choices and directions people face make personal guidance more critical than ever. The modern age offers an excess of options for self-improvement, but brings with it the dilemma of choice and the crippling fears of making the wrong ones. The urgency lies in finding a reliable way to navigate life's complexities through the guidance of the one person you can always count on, yourself. He is now on a mission to bring the concept of self-coaching to all.
Ajit's credentials extend beyond his entrepreneurial success. He has been featured by top-tier media, including Forbes and Entrepreneur, and has been featured as a speaker on stages around the globe and even hosts his own podcast. So in this conversation, we have a discussion on Ajit's journey, offering tangible tips for self-coaching, talk blocks, and even ways to measure the effectiveness of self-coaching. We talk all about daily practices and habits, and we do think this is a great episode for anyone needing a little bit of motivation, and we can't wait to hear what you think about it. So enjoy the episode. Hi guys, before we get to today's episode, we want to share how excited we are to offer our community 20% off their first order at Sakara with code XOCOURAGEOUS. We have been big fans of the company for years, and the Sakara Life organic meal delivery program is based on a whole food, plant-rich diet that includes fresh, nutrient-dense, and delicious ingredients. It's perfect for those weeks you need a refresh or don't have time to meal prep.
They also have a clean boutique, which offers delicious food-forward bars, snacks, beauty water drops, and my personal favorite, metabolism super powder, which works to fire up your metabolism, stabilize blood sugar, eliminate bloat, and decrease puffiness. The naturally rich, low-sugar, dark chocolate flavor is perfect for smoothies or simply mixed with coffee and nut milk. I also regularly use the Sakar cookbook full of plant-rich recipes, which you can purchase on their website. Click the link in our show notes to visit sakara.com and use code XOCOURAGEOUS for 20% off your first order. We know you will love it as much as we do. Now, on to the episode. Well, thank you, Ajit, for joining us today. Erica and I are very excited to have you on the show and learn from you. And just to get us started, and for our listeners, if they're not familiar with who you are and your work, can you share a little bit about your personal background and how that's led you into the world of coaching?
Absolutely. So I was born in India. I was born in Jaipur, a small town, 23 people sharing the same space. It's called a joint family in India, which effectively means your uncles and your grandparents and grandparents are brothers and sisters. Everybody lives in the same space. So I grew up in a very nurturing environment because we had so many people in the same house, but not so abundant as an environment where if you're trying to cram in 23 people into any space, it's going to get a little busy. So that's kind of how I grew up. That's where I grew up. But early on in my life, that introduced the idea of taking care of each other a little bit more differently than one would imagine in, especially in the Western world. Because when you are so many people in a small space, you kind of have to watch each other's back. You have to support each other. And then coincidentally, my grandfather was also considered the elder of the community in some way. And because of that, I would see consistently that there would be people visiting our house. People would come with their entire families and would spend hours and hours with him. And as kids, we could never really understand what's happening. All we knew is there are a bunch of people in our house and we already have a really small house. So it wasn't exciting for us until I got into my teens and I started asking those questions. I'm like, why are these people here? Why is there people staying overnight sometimes? What is really happening? And it was brought to my attention that people come to my grandfather to find solutions to problems they have in their lives. So coaching was not a thing at the time. Of course, he was not a coach. He was just an elder. He was somebody who was doing his business and on Saturdays and Sundays and pretty much all of his evenings was invested in helping other people. So very early on, I got conditioned to have an interest and curiosity of helping if I can, and being able to support anyone if I can. So that's where I think inherently in my heart of hearts, I am a coach and I've always been one. But I really got introduced to the idea of coaching when I was supporting this company called Mindvalley. Again, I don't know if your audience knows Mindvalley, but it's a big personal transformation company. We're big into meditation, manifestation, changing your health and well-being. Like I was sharing with you before, we were right before us getting on a call. I was 90 minutes with Vishen, who's the founder of Mindvalley, and Naveen Jain, who's founder of Viome, talking about wellness and well-being, really, to our audience. So that was the company I was introduced to as at the time when I got introduced to them. They were a small organization. There were maybe 10 people in the entire company. We were operating out of a small house in Malaysia. And I joined them as an intern. But I got really passionate and interested in what the work they were trying to do in the world. Because, well, I was exposed to that a long time ago. I just didn't have a name for it. And that really got me started in the field of personal transformation. And I started to hire teachers and go to events and hire coaches to help me to be able to be better as a person. Lo and behold, with all that support from being an intern in the company in 2008, I was the CEO of the company in 2014. So that's about 7 years, 6 years in. I had taken pretty much every role after role, found success in it, and found myself to be the leader of the organization. At that time, Mindvalley was already sizable. We had already launched the business. We were teaching about 100,000 students a year already at that time. So I was able to be a big part of that journey. But what I really found myself wondering at that time, and it happened because of an event that happened in my life, I was going through a pretty hard relationship. And there is an experience that happened while in December 2014, I was celebrating the New Year's Eve with my colleagues who were also my friends. And we were taking the roads, taking the streets in Kuala Lumpur to create a relatable experience. It would be like going to the streets in New York for New Year's Eve. It's a big city. People come on the street. There's fireworks. There's a big celebration on the streets. And Kuala Lumpur is like that in some places of the city. And so I was like, all right, let's go and take the streets and let's party it out and let's have fun. and watch the fireworks. And as it was about to hit 12 o'clock, I was separated from the rest of the group. I wasn't hanging out with the same crew that I got there with. And I was by myself. And I see something really weird that I would not expect on New Year's Eve. There is a beautiful older Asian woman, completely dressed in white, standing right in front of me, maybe like 10 feet apart, 15 feet apart. And she was looking right at me. And I did not know this person. I was pretty certain I do not know this person. And the person starts walking towards me, comes real close to my face, and asks me the question, "Who are you?" I was like, "Well, what does that question mean? I don't know this person. Who are you?" I was like, "I'm Ajit." And she looks right back in my eyes and stares me down and says, "No, who are you? Who am I? Who am I?" And I couldn't find the answer. I didn't know how to respond to that question. I knew I was CEO of Mindvalley, but that's my work title. Well, who am I? Like, I didn't know the answer to that question. And as I brought my attention back to the person, I saw her walking away and almost disappear in the crowd. But she left me with this question that I couldn't shake off. Who am I? Who am I? Who am I? Who am I? And the entire night went by, the next day went by, the day after went by, and I couldn't find the answer of who am I. Couldn't shake that question off. And that set me on the path of finding myself, set me on a path of finding even more coaches to help me discover who am I. And so the next 1 year, I would quit my job as CEO. I would end my relationship. I would rediscover my friendships with my friends. I would make new friendships. I would reconnect with my parents. Basically, I had a complete identity shift. And that was all because of my coaches, my supporters, my teachers, my educators, my mentors. And while I was interacting with them, while I was getting helped by them, I realized that they were suffering too. That there was no real consistent education that was there available for coaches. Like if you were to graduate from a certification program, you would certify and then that's it. That's where the buck would stop. If you were to want to start a business, there was no real person that was teaching how to do one-on-one group coaching programs effectively. Or they were priced at insane prices. Like they were programs and coaches that would want to charge a new coach $50,000 to teach them business. And I was like, that makes no sense. The person's just getting started. Why would you charge them that kind of money? They need support now. They need to be successful. Now, I had a background. Of course, I had helped build Mindvalley, right? So I had a background in business. I was like, well, that's a problem I can solve while I discover who am I. And that led me to create EverCoach. And that became a company in partnership with Mindvalley. That's the company that now is also known as Mindvalley Coach or Mindvalley Coaching Certifications. That is the same company, the same organization. And that's where I got fully embedded into the world of coaching.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you for sharing your journey. I love your work and I love that you really help individuals come back to themselves and this concept of self-coaching that I'm excited to dive into today. And I also find it very empowering that your work also focuses on that I'm sure we're going to unpack as well, but kind of like what is success in these maybe limitations we put on ourselves that you could still find success and fulfillment in your 30s, 40s, 50s, right? It's not just something that you need to find in your 20s or early 30s. And I'm curious though, before we get into all of that, since you mentioned it, how do you answer that question now? Who are you?
Well, now I answer this question in a philosophical way. The way I answer it is, I am an ever-evolving work of art. And the reason why I lean into that is because I've realized, like you, like me, like all of our listeners, we've had experiences in life that shape us somewhat. And because of the experiences that we've had in life, it shapes us in a particular way. And we hold tight to that being that we feel we are as a definitive answer, as a definitive being. What I found is we've been told a lie. We've been told a lie that by 7, your brain is completely formed. By 13, 14, you're fully formed as a person. By 18, you really know what you want and what you need to do. I think that's a lie. I think we are constantly gathering these experiences as a soul. And as we gather these experiences, the work of art that we are gets another layer of paint. And so the painting doesn't look any same than what it was even a year ago.
Yeah.
So we are not a complete work of art. We are beautiful in wherever we are right now, but it's an ever-evolving piece. This piece is never going to end. This piece will keep evolving, and that's how I like to look at myself, and that's how I like to answer who am I.
It's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And so I wanted to ask, so how did your experience and your experiences really shape your views on self-coaching and entering that space? And what is self-coaching? Absolutely. Maybe we could start there too. Yeah.
Self-coaching is your ability to be able to coach yourself when life is happening around you, is to be able to take a pause and look at what is, look at why is what is, and how you can change it. That is really self-coaching. And the reason why I became a big proponent of self-coaching is because, as you can imagine, I was hiring a lot of coaches. And I found there were a lot of times when I really needed them, I couldn't access them. It wasn't because they were not available. It's just life. You know, they were coaching somebody else. I had a contract limitation. I was not in the mental space to be able to even think that I should call my coach, right? So there were many reasons why I would not be able to work with them. At the same point of time, I was really fascinated by coaching. So I started coaching a lot of my clients, or I started finding clients and started working with them. They were businesses, high-performing individuals, a lot of individuals that wanted to get out of a very typical situation or a difficult situation in their life. And as I was, a lot of relationships and all these individuals, as I was coaching, I realized that the biggest change that happens in a person is not in the coaching session. It happens between the coaching sessions, right? Somebody listens to your podcast. The change is not happening in the podcast. The change will happen after the podcast, between the two podcast episodes. And I realized that if the most powerful time to create a transformation is in between coaching sessions, why would I leave my client alone during that time? But I can't be there all the time. But what I can do is I can train my clients to coach themselves. Think about a habit formation, right? If you are trying to break a habit or create a new habit, you can know what you need to do, right? A coach can come in and say, hey, listen, let's try this. But it's the moment when you're about to fall is when you need your coach the most. It's hard, difficult, sometimes almost impossible to get hold of your coach at that time, because it is a moment that would define what happens next, right? But if you have the awareness in that moment, oh, crap. I'm about to go back into my old pattern. If I could give you the tools, the strategy, the mindset, the behavior of being able to observe yourself and be able to go, I'm about to get into my old pattern. I've already started the change. I've given you a powerful tool that will get you to not fall in the trap. I will do it even better if I share with you, hey, listen, now that you observed that, oh, you're about to fall in the pattern, also notice that you have a choice, that you are at a choice point. And it's not one or the other choice. It has 10, 15, 20 choices that you have. You can make any of them. And that you will always default to the easiest. The moment you realize you have incredible power with yourself, and now habit change becomes easy. Mm-hmm. Because you're not relying on the coach. You've got the tools that your coach would also use in that moment if they were to pick up the phone at the right time.
Right.
Right. Now, it doesn't discount coaching, by the way, because coaching is still incredibly powerful, because you cannot learn self-coaching in an independent environment. It's a difficult thing to do. That's why coaches need a lot of practice. That's why coaches take a lot of time to really become really good at that skill. So is self-coaching. So self-coaching doesn't eliminate coaching. It adds to it.
It makes sense. And the way you describe it, too, there's something empowering about bringing the choice, the autonomy back to the person, because then you also develop the skills to not have to rely on, well, I'll use the coach as the example in this moment, but in that moment that you have, sort of like sovereignty to make that choice. And then therefore also, like, take responsibility in a different way for your life, I think. And developing those skills, I think, are probably some of the hardest skills as a human to develop. But as you said, it doesn't replace coaching. And I think about, like, we use coaches in our world in so many different ways. You know, yes, we hear about business coaching and things like that, but any athlete needs a coach to excel. Any even artists. Absolutely. Like I was a classical singer and a musical theater singer and jazz for many years I trained in. And it was like, I still to this day go for coaching, even though I've also coached people. Right. So it's like, it's this idea of having this support system, having someone like help you tune into it, but to know that you have, or like at least be able to learn that you have the ability and the capability to be able to make choices in your life based on these skills that you can develop. It's really, I think it's really empowering because then you're not seeking constantly outside of yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That is so true. And what better thing that we can do for ourselves and for humanity than to give the power back to us?
Yeah, absolutely. So can you share some insights on like how, if someone's interested in this, how maybe some small steps where they could start to even build awareness, or as you were saying, the ability to observe yourself? Are there any sort of like small beginning steps?
There are simple ways to get started with it. They're not going to make you a master of it, but they will get the party started. Let's just call it that way, right? So the first thing that you want to do is start to journal, especially your difficult circumstances. And the reason to journal is because a lot of times, and tell me if this is true for you, I would think it because it's true for me, is when a difficult thing is happening, I'm mostly in my head. I ruminate. Yeah. I'm like telling myself the same story again and again and again. And it's the same story. So I'm not going, oh, what's the other side's perspective? What is actually happening? I'm not considering any of it. I'm just thinking about the same thing again and again and again. And because you're thinking about the same thing again and again and again, you believe that that is the truth of that situation. You go, no, what happened, as a matter of fact, is this, right? Because you have told that story to yourself 1,000 times by that time. But the moment you start to write down the story, it's almost as if the story comes to completion. It almost comes to, oh, now I know exactly what happened from my perspective, right? Now, because it is on a piece of paper, you don't ruminate on it. Once you stop ruminating, now is the perfect opportunity to ask yourself a question. And the question would be, if I was to watch this like a movie, what would I see? If I was to watch this like a movie, what would I see? When you ask that question to yourself, what happens is now you have your perspective, but you distance yourself from the perspective because you're watching person A, person B. What is happening? Person A, you know, of course, but now suddenly you have awareness of person B, right? And when you understand that there are always multiple worlds colliding to make our one universe that we see, you now have awareness that everything around you is a function of how you see things. Right. And that brings awareness to the moment. Now, this is awareness when there's something that's difficult happening in your life or something that is challenging in your life. Does that help, Ali?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's great. We love to give some like kind of tangible things for our listeners too. So I think that's mm-hmm. a wonderful example, even just like the act of putting yourself in the director's chair for a second and having that distance automatically, I think probably gives perspective.
Yeah. It's a great journal prompt. And I'm a really big journaler. Journaling is really important in my own self-care and in my daily practice. And I'm curious too, just to continue off of that, because I think awareness is really important, right? And a lot of, I think many of us can live our lives very unaware. And I think self-awareness is a big step, but it brings me to something you said earlier, right? When you're in a moment where maybe like a past pattern is about to come up, right? Like you said, that moment where you could really use your coach or someone trusted, but it's a moment, you need to make that choice. And I think a lot of us, you know, and I think it's why so many of us can get stuck in cycles, we'll choose the comfortable previous pattern, even if it's not serving us. And so I imagine once you have self-awareness, you can at least notice, right? Okay, here's the moment, but they still can't kind of make it past that moment of maybe they rage at their parent or scream at their partner or yell at their kid, I'm a raging person. So I'm using anger as my example, yeah. Clearly, but you know, even just for myself, right? Like I know better, but I'll still find myself like snapping in a moment of stress. And I don't love that for myself. So just using myself as an example.
Absolutely. I'll give a two-step approach. You or anyone that is in any emotional state is when you're in an emotional state, it's okay to process it the way you need to process it. That's absolutely okay. So if it does end up being yelling at someone or doing something that you're not necessarily proud of, it's okay, right? Give yourself grace, because even with all the tools in the world, I'm not trying to make you a robot, right? We are not a disciplinarian where we say step one, two, three, four, and that's all we can do. Be humans. It takes away from the human experience if you don't acknowledge and appreciate your emotions. Emotions have nothing inherently wrong with them. Once you've given yourself grace for having emotions and having a passionate life, because that's sometimes anger is basically passion expressed in not the fun way, but that's what it is, right? You're passionate about something is why you're angry about it, right? You're not angry about it just because you're angry about it. You're passionate about it, right? So passion expressed wrongly or unacceptably may look as anger. The second step to it is to ask yourself, what is it that I can do going forward that would be different? Or what would be a trigger that I can have that will allow me to get present to what I'm about to do or what I'm doing right now? See, and are you guys in a relationship, married or in relationship?
We're both married, yeah.
Right. My wife and I, my wife is a trainer in emotions and emotional intelligence. I am, of course, a coach, and we train coaches and trainers and educators. We've written books. She's written two books on emotions, like really regulating. She's got a bestseller on it, right? And we get into fights sometimes, right? But here's the key. We both have a tool that allows us to, whoever remembers first, that right now I'm about to say something, whoever is present to that first, that I'm about to say something that I'm going to regret, or I'm about to respond from a place that's not a place of love and service, which is our core inherent values. One of us would go, Hakuna Matata. And that's our word. And you could have any word, right? That's our word, safe word, if I may, to stop hurting each of those emotions and our psychological selves. Sorry about that. But one of us, whoever is more aware at the time, would go, Hakuna Matata. And even if the other person's so mad, they go, okay, Hakuna Matata. It simply means, let's shelf this, regulate ourselves, and then come back to this topic. But you got to come back to the topic. You're not putting it under the rug. You're not saying we're not talking about this. It's simply that both of us, when we are regulated to a place where we are resourceful in a way, emotionally resourceful in a way that we can actually handle this stuff, is when we'll come back to the table and discuss it, right? This is a simple tool that somebody can use if they are going, hey, I go emotional blowout all the time, say with my kid or with my partner. Come up with a tool that whoever gets aware first, whoever is present to it first, all you got to do is say the word. And of course, it's going to hurt, because initially you would want to do everything to get your word in, right? We're emotionally high at that time. We're like, yeah. Oh, I need to get my word in. How can you say Hakuna Matata right now? No, I need to finish my statement, right?
Yeah.
And that is the time where you practice this skill over time and you realize, oh, this skill actually has not only saved our marriage, it has actually made our marriage so exciting and so fun and so great. Because let's be real. And I'm sure you've done it. I've done it. I've said things to my wife that I absolutely do not mean, just because I'm angry, or just because I'm pissed, or just because I'm passionate about something in that moment.
Yeah.
Both of you are nodding. I don't know if this is a video podcast, but I can say it for the listeners that they have also done it. And you're probably nodding right now going, yes, as a listener, I've done this to someone. You don't actually mean it, because inherently we don't. But that passionate state, that emotional state gets us to say it. So what is it that we can do so we don't make this emotional state a baggage that we'll carry for years? And I've seen couples, sometimes we'll do relationship coaching. I've seen couples that carry that baggage for decades. Like they're bringing up topics that happened 5-10 years ago. I'm like, 5-10 years ago, you're not even the same person.
Right. No. And I imagine you can use a safe word for, even if it's for yourself, right? Like that was a great example in like a partnership, but if it's like a child, or if you just notice in a work environment, right? Like if your like natural state, like I can get passionate or angry, But yeah, it's not always like, yes, like, you know, my husband and I always in a fight will be like, we're on the same team, whoever. That's kind of like our word. We'll remind ourselves in a moment if we're in like a heated moment to be like, wait, same team, you know. But sometimes if it's with not a safe space, maybe that's part of the self-coaching too, is you could have a safe word with yourself to kind of bring you back into the present moment, right? To bring you back out of your head into your body and be like, wait, safe word for myself.
Absolutely. If we're talking about emotional states, there are many ways to do it. And especially with yourself, you can do a lot more than when you're in with somebody else. So safe word for yourself absolutely works. What works for kids is to teach them how to breathe. Because usually when you're in a heightened emotional state, you start breathing really shallow, and that takes away the mental clarity that you need to actually regulate your emotions. Right? This is just scientific stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So if you, and I have a 5-year-old, I have a 2-year-old. The 2-year-old still doesn't really get it. But the 5-year-old right now, if they're in heightened state, he would just start breathing. He'll like, and a 5-year-old, you would think, like, does not follow any rules. But my 5-year-old knows this because we've been training that since they were a child, since they were 2. Like my daughter sometimes, who's 2, would sometimes would do it. She's not as comfortable with the practice as my 5-year-old is. But the reason why I'm giving their example is because it's, if you put presence to it, it is not hard to train, because your body anyways wants to be in a state that is called homeostasis, which is a normalized state. Your body doesn't want to be elevated. It's right. Not its natural, comfortable place. It wants to get comfortable. And so you could do practices like breathing. You could do practices like for example, most of the work, because I work only 5 hours a day, but I work very intensely, which is why I work bare feet. Because I always regulate in the energy of the earth. So everybody's different. Everybody's got to find their jive. But that's another way to really regulate yourself, is to be connected. Hugging is a great way if you have a partner to regulate with them, which is one of those tools. Like if there is a person that's listening to this podcast and they're like, every single evening I get into a fight with my partner, or most evenings I get into a fight with my partner, here's a trick. Before you say a word, both of you hug each other for 30 seconds. The moment you meet each other, you will not fight that evening. And here's the reason why. The partners had a day, you've had a day, they're completely different days, right? If both of you went to work, right? Even if one stayed home, one went to work, completely different day. Completely different day, completely different emotional state. One person might be vibing really high. Let's say, imagine they've had a great day. One might be vibing really low. So what happens at that time when they meet each other? It's not that this person puts this person up. Usually this person drags this person down. It could be anyone, right? If both of them are at lower state, again, they're dragging them further down. What happens with hugging and regulating each other is you come to a normalized plane. You might not be high, you might not be low, but you will be normalized, or not normalized, but probably more balanced is probably the right word here. And because you're more balanced, now it's less likely that you will get into an argument.
We want to take a minute to tell you a little bit about the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. Erica and I are both certified integrative nutrition health coaches. I have advanced training in hormone health, and she has advanced training in gut health. And together, we offer health coaching and corporate coaching through the Courageous Wellness Collective. IIN has taken the lead in the health coaching industry from its inception and provides a comprehensive curriculum that includes 100 plus theories of nutrition, strong coaching skills, and has now joined forces with Chopra Global to offer an array of certifications from yoga to meditation as well.
We loved the program and have had many listeners ask us about continuing their education in nutrition, health coaching, and even just advancing their personal knowledge about food and nutrition. We are very excited to be able to offer a discount to Courageous Wellness listeners to study at IIN. The program is completely accessible virtually with lectures led by health, wellness, and medical industry experts. To receive 20% off your tuition on any course, use the code ALYSSAFRENCH20 at the time of enrollment. We have also included a link in the show notes that will take you directly to IIN to learn more about their wonderful program.
You've coached so many people. Do you find that there are kind of common fears or challenges or things that come up, generally speaking, when people start this process, when people, because it takes somebody who's wanting some sort of personal transformation or growth in order to just seek coaching to begin with. So I'm sure that people are very open, but when they go into the process, do you find any common sort of like early resistance that you might observe?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's common resistance to coaching and self-coaching at the same time. These are common patterns that we see in human beings. And this happened mostly because of the remuneration of the stories that we tell ourselves again and again and again. One of the most common things that people believe about themselves is that they are not enough. They're not good enough. They're not good enough to be able to practice this. They're not good enough to be able to actually have a happy life. They're not good enough to be a great partner. They're not good enough to be a coach. They're not good enough to be successful. They have told themselves the story, and they've borrowed the story from one or two areas of their life and made it about everything about their life. Here's how a story like this may unfold for somebody. You were in an early relationship in your teens. Some partner said, you're not a good partner, or you're not good enough for me, or something like that, right? Now you have taken that story, you ruminated on it, you made, I'm not a good partner. But what is worse is usually you will ruminate on that and make that your reality across everything, right? Because you would go, if I'm not a good enough partner, I'm probably not good enough as a parent. I'm probably not good enough as a colleague. I'm not probably good enough as an entrepreneur. I'm probably not good enough, because that's how we tell ourselves story, right? We get into this comfort of cramming ourselves into this small box that we create for ourselves. And once we hit 25, 30, the world tells us you're well-defined now. You've chosen a career path. You have to choose this career path. This is what you're going to do. Guess what? This also tells us, oh, my box, if I'm not good enough, is static. I will always be never good enough. So you meet people in 40s and 50s. They still believe that they're not good enough for a relationship or have terrible time in their current relationship because of the story that was done in their teens. 30 years later, they still believe they're not a good enough partner. 30 years later, they still believe they're not beautiful. Right. Another common thing that happens is, I am different. It works for you. It won't work for me. Right. Which is true. All of us are completely different, but we are also completely same. Right. While it may not work the way it works for me, it won't work the same way for you, but it still does work. Coaching yourself, questioning yourself, stopping yourself and observing, building awareness still works. Does the formula look, or the experience look, exactly as it's looking for me, and how it's going to look for Erica, how it's going to look for Ali? No, the experience is going to be completely different. And funny thing is, nobody else would know how that experience looked except for you. Because how many times have we had experience in life that we couldn't define in words, especially when it's personal to us?
Yeah.
All the time. All great experiences are very hard to define.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's another pattern that repeats in individuals. They believe it works for somebody else, but it won't work for me because I am different. And the last is again, it's usually the last one, the most common one is, which comes usually from childhood, is it is not enough. Whatever is the thing that they chase in life is just not enough in the world. You know, there's only limited that goes around, and because it's limited, you can only have a piece of it. And if you take that piece, you're actually taking somebody else's. So because of it is not enough, we also tend to not pursue a better life. It's because we go, oh, if I have a better life, somebody will have a worse life. So again, something that is completely untrue.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing those. And I think when you mentioned as well, right? Like, I think humans can put these limitations on themselves based on age or noise or story, as we've been talking about. And you know, I think like so many people I know are like their fittest and healthiest in their 40s and 50s and look so much better than they did in their 20s or 30s, or find great love in their 40s and 50s, or start new businesses, right? Come into their careers. And there's so much emphasis on youth and story that, I think that's really amazing that that's part of your work too. And I'm curious, I have kind of a two-part question. So, you know, I think the first part is, what you know, we talked about journaling, we talked about kind of the self-awareness piece, but are there other daily practices or habits that you recommend for someone who is trying to become their own coach? Is there like a mindfulness component? And then the second part is, I think a lot of times, a lot of us are inundated with like self-help work that it can be hard to kind of measure the effectiveness of it. So I guess like the first part is, what are some daily practices and habits? And then how do we measure if they're actually successful?
So choosing daily habits is a little bit situational because it is very contextual to the person that is using those habits or is seeing if these habits work for them. Some of the common practice, I'm generalizing this advice, of course, please take it with a pinch of salt. But general advice helps because you can pick and see which one works for you or feels like it's congruent to you. One of the habits that is key to becoming more self-aware is to have a great body awareness. Body awareness is you knowing what's even happening in your body. And most of us are disconnected because we use our body as a tool, but we don't understand our body. We don't experience our body. We don't take a minute to go, what's really happening, right? If we are feeling tired, we just drink coffee because we use it like a tool. We don't go, why am I feeling tired? What did I eat? Is that how, what is responding to my body that's not working? Am I sleeping well? What is it that's really happening? So one of the great ways to really understand how to transform your life, how to coach yourself, is to build what is called body awareness. Body awareness can be built by eating, either following a great regimented diet. So you can, it's either an elimination diet, so you can find out what foods work for you or what don't, or a great tool, which my friend Naveen Jain has built, is called Viome. Viome is a test that you can take. It's available in 18 countries in the world, where you take this test and based on your microbiome in your gut and your saliva and your blood, they will give you what foods may be hurting you. Right. And because of this test, then you can go, okay, maybe I should avoid these foods and see how I feel. Right. So it's a great way to kind of get the party started, get some data, see where to move. Right. So that's one great thing, one tool to build some body awareness. Another great thing is, and if anybody doesn't do it, is at least go 3 times to the gym and do what is called strength training or resistance training, which basically is you are resisting weights. You're picking up weights because what it does is it builds the amount of muscle you have in your body. The more muscle you have in your body, what we find is more aware you are about the nuances of your body because you can actually feel it. When there's too much fat on our body, it's very hard to really know what's happening inside because the fat protects it. So it has a good ecosystem. Like there's a reason why we store fat because it protects our body. It is not wrong to have fat, but it's important to have muscle. So you have awareness of what's actually happening. So that's one way of doing it is to get great body awareness. Another way is to build a simple practice of taking the time to really question your decisions in the area of life you want to change. So say, let's take a hypothetical example. Let's say somebody's on the call and say, listen, I would love to make more money, right? Great. What do you believe about money? Just simple question. It's a simple question. But most people don't ask this question to themselves. They don't go, what do I believe? What do I stand for? Right? Right? And you will find that when you start to question this to yourself, you go, crap. Either I just don't have a belief about money, which is terrible because if you don't have a belief about money, well, how will you make more money? You have no beliefs around it. You don't know if it's good. You don't know if it's bad. You don't know why you want it. You don't know why you don't want it. There's no way you can operate if you don't know anything about it, if you don't have an awareness about it. And if you find your awareness to be more of, well, I think billionaires are evil and they're trying to take over the world, but good luck making money, right? Because if you hate money, you can't make more money, right? If you feel people do wrong things with money, there's no way anything in your soul is going to move towards getting more money for you, right? So bringing awareness to what do you even believe about something changes on a day-to-day level of how you would coach yourself from that situation. The good thing about self-coaching and the important thing about self-coaching to note is you want to make it focused. You don't want to say, I'm going to coach myself on everything. This is not where you start. You can eventually get there, of course. But you start by picking one area of your life that's most important to you. If it's health, build health. If it's money, pick money. If it is your relationship, pick relationship. So that's the first part. Does that help with the first part of the question?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, cool. So the second part of the question was, how do we measure it? Now, the measurement of it also changes contextually to what you're working on. The easiest way to know if what you're doing is working is if you see progress in the direction you would like and the feelings that you want to feel, right? How do you see that? So the problem with most of goal setting or problem with most change that we want to have in our lives is we have this big vision where we want to get to, right? So say somebody who's on the podcast who is struggling with health says, I want to have six-pack abs. Let's say this person has 35% body fat, right? To get to six-pack abs, which is about 10% body fat or less, it's going to take them 10 years, sometimes 5 years, if not 10 years, at least 5 years, I would say, right? Good diet, good workout, 5 years, dedicated, consistent, 35% to 10%, hypothetically. That's at least 2-3 years, right? So if it's going to take that long and you start looking at your numbers the next week and go, well, I'm not at six-pack abs, well, you're going to feel defeated. And so you're going to give up. So the measurement that you want to put in is, am I doing the process that gets me to the outcome, right? So if you said you want six-pack abs, you don't want to question if I have six-pack abs. You want to question, am I going to the gym 3 times a week? Am I eating a nutritious diet? Am I actually not overeating, right? Which are fundamentals to be able to get to a lower body fat percentage. If you would meet me about 2.5 years ago when I had my daughter, you would meet a person that I was 25% body fat at the time. And that time I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, right? So my 5-year-old was 3 years old. His name is Ari. And one of the days mom was taking care of my newborn. I live in Austin, Texas, which is hot in June and July. And in about late July, I told my son, hey, let's go out to the park and play, right? Mom's sleeping with the newborn. Let's go have some fun. And we go out to the park and we start playing and we are running and we're playing tag and we're having a great time. And a few minutes in, I start puffing. I'm puffing. It's hot. So I'm like, oh, this is so hot. I'm tired. I'm getting exhausted. And as I'm getting exhausted, of course, my 3-year-old doesn't feel a ounce of it, right? So he's going, dada, dada, let's go run, 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 tag me. I'm going, oh, yeah, ooh, yes, ooh. And I am huffing and puffing and I'm kind of like losing my breath. And this 2-year-old is constantly challenging me to come join him. And I go, Ari, I'm really tired. Give me a minute. Let me breathe. 2-year-old looks and dead in my eyes and says one of the most coach-like things that are hard coach things that somebody could ever tell someone. He says, Dada, you always tired. Dada, you always tired. It was like 37 or 36 at the time. And I was like, 36, a 3-year-old tells me I'm always tired. Now, it might have been that he had told me that before, but that in that moment really, really landed. And so it became my goal that I don't want to be that person. I created a vision of myself where I said, when and if my kids have grandkids, I want to lead the hike. I don't want to fall behind it. When and if my son and daughter are 16, 15 years old and they bring their friends to the house, they go, damn, Ajit's dad looks really good. We should work out with him. It became my goal that next time I take off my shirt, not next time, but one time I take my shirt off, my wife looks at me and says, ooh, what a sexy man. Right? These sound really arbitrary, random goals, but because I set that direction up for me, 2.5 years later today, as we have this conversation, I've gone from 25% body fat to 13% body fat, right? My wife has said one time, without me telling her that's what my expectation and hope was one day, she has said that to me one time. My son is not 16, my daughter's not 15, so we don't know if those goals will happen, but think about it this way. My goals were so long, far away. Me having grandkids. I just had kids. I'm talking about grandkids. Right. I'm talking about when my kids are 15 or 16 years old. The reason why the goals are so far out is because it lets me love the process. And so I can have a measurement that is more, am I going to the gym? Am I eating right? Am I feeling this energy today or not? Mm-hmm. Right. It's much more measurable versus the big vision goals.
Thank you for sharing that. I think it's an example of where it's like, I think sometimes we get so focused on like instant gratification. We live in a culture where that's rewarded, or oftentimes like quick hits of dopamine or whatever it is. And so this idea of setting goals and giving ourselves time to enjoy the process, I think that sort of framing around it is great, because it also takes immediate pressure off. It gives you time to create those small steps, which are oftentimes way more manageable than doing something extreme and hoping for, you know, a big overnight change, which is just not the way it works. So I actually think it's a really like empowering way to look at goals. And I have one quick question for you before we start to wrap up. And it was something you mentioned earlier, and I would just love you to speak to this. You said, I work 5-hour workdays. Yes. And I love that. And you've also been a CEO of a major coaching company. You have multiple companies now. And some people, you know, glorify like the grind, for lack of a better way to describe it, and say, you know, you have to work 18-hour days or whatever it might be. And so much so that like you sacrifice your health, you sacrifice a lot of other things. And so I would just love you to speak to how and why that is important for you in keeping a 5-hour workday for yourself, and what that looks like.
So it's a nuanced answer. So the first level of answer is you need to know what's important to you. It's very easy to glorify long hours, work hard. It's a good narrative to have. And at a point in life, it is important, which I will talk about in a second. But the first question to really answer is what's really important to you as a person. It's very important to me that I have a great relationship with my wife. It's very important to me that I have a great relationship with my kids. It's important to me that I have friends. It's important to me that I'm fit and healthy. It's important to me that I creatively feel expressed. It's important to me that I'm always growing. All of those things require time away from the computer, away from the phone, right? Which is also why I like my phone time is also not very high. It's very low. It's not like I'm working in the office 5 hours and then I'm working at home on my phone. No, my phone's off most of the time, right? And so the first question to really ask is what's important to you? Second question to understand is that most of the time, people who are working really hard are doing one of two things. They're either building a skill that they don't have, or they're procrastinating. There is only two things that they're doing. So for example, or there's a third type where they're crazy, like crazy in a good way or a bad way, depending on how you look at it, but they're crazy, right? So the first thing is a lot of times, let's say if you were starting a new business, somebody was a new coach and he said, I'm working all the time. It's probably because they're trying to learn how to build a website. They're probably trying to learn how to make a YouTube video. They're probably trying to learn A, B, C, D, E. But you need to understand that when you're skill building, if you qualify that as work, you will actually not build a skill because you will hate it, right? But if you go, hey, I work 2 hours, and honestly, no starting coach or starting business entrepreneur can work 10-hour days because there's not enough work to go around. You're relying on other people to do things. You're mostly sitting on your ass. So the other time that you're doing is you're skill building. Now, when you say skill building, guess what happens? You say, oh, I'm skill building to learn how to do better YouTube videos, right? So Mondays, I work 10 hours, but 8 hours of those, I'm studying a program. I'm making my videos. I'm editing the videos to see what's the flow that I want. And I'm doing that every Monday, every Tuesday, every Wednesday. And that's it. Then Thursday and Friday, you're only working 2 hours a day because you can't be skill building all of the days. It's also important. That's when it becomes important, because now what a person says is, yes, but I'm skill building on YouTube, on Instagram, on Facebook, on blog writing, on this and this and this. Well, you can't build all the skills at the same time. It's not possible. Now suddenly you go, oh, so I am wasting time thinking I'm working, because you're trying to build 8 skills at the same time. It's just not how skill building works. You're actually losing time. You're not actually working on the time, right? So that's the first context of when people say I'm working all the time, they're skill building, they're not working. And once they understand that, they will skill build faster, because it doesn't take that long when you know what you're doing. Most people don't know what they're doing. They're just responding to everybody outside. They would do research on Instagram for 6 hours in the day. You're not working. You are wasting time. The second category of people are procrastinating. They're procrastinating and they qualify that as working. Procrastination happens when you have less confidence in your ability than the work that you have to deliver, right? So what happens is because you get fearful of what you're about to do, you do everything else that you can do to not do the thing that you're fearful of. Oh, I have to go outreach that cafe to get a, let's say, design client. It feels hard. I don't want to really talk to people. I don't know if they will say no. You tell the story to yourself. And now you go, oh, but before I go to the cafe, I must do research on cafes. Oh, good luck. 6 hours later or the day is gone, right? That's procrastinating, right? Because you're avoiding something that is fearful to you. But here's the truth about fear. There's no way to come over fear but to face it. There's absolutely no way. There's no mental model that will get you to come over the fear. The only thing that will happen is you will do the thing that you're fearful of. And it'll tell you that you were scared of absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. So that's the second thing. That's the second reason why we work long hours. And the third one is the crazy ones. Crazy ones are people like Elon Musk. They just love working. They cannot sit idle. There's a book that came out recently on Elon Musk's life, and that's why I'm reminded of the crazy one. Otherwise, I would never mention it. It's a book by Isaac Walterson, I think. The same person who wrote the Steve Jobs book. He wrote a book called Elon Musk. It's basically on Elon Musk's life. And if you look at the references of people that talk about that person, you realize that that person just cannot be with themselves. They need to fix something. And if they don't fix something, they destroy things. So it's actually better for them to keep fixing things because otherwise they will destroy things, right? So if you have a personality type, and that's a very, 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 very small section of society. So if you really, really think you are that person, fine. But most of us are not.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Doesn't it? So much sense. I know. It's interesting. I was even thinking because I was thinking about, you know, even in a different context, like I love to read and reading is really important for my self-care and as well. And we're about to go into what your self-care is, but I find myself when I'm not reading and I'm like, well, I don't have time to read or I've been really busy. I'm like, how much time was I on TikTok? Like I could have been reading instead of being on TikTok, right? Like, so I think we make like the way you're talking about work is the way I talk about like reading or self-care practices. Sometimes I'm like, I'm too busy, but then I'm like, on my phone or whatever it is. So it's a really, I think, you know, the through line of all this too is like this kind of radical honesty with yourself about your choices and your goals and your desires and that self-awareness. So yeah, thank you. I've taken away so much from this conversation and I feel like we could talk to you for another hour. But as we begin to wrap up, we do conclude with three questions. And the first, which we've kind of talked about a bit, but I'm curious for you, what are your daily self-care practices and non-negotiables in your day-to-day?
So my day starts with a lot of hugs and cuddles. I have a 2 and 5 year old and I include that in my self-care practice. It must happen every morning and my heart hurts when I'm away from them. So that is part of my self-care. It regulates my nervous system beautifully. Apart from that, I do my practices here in the office. I must meditate every morning. I have a series of meditation that I do. So that's very important to me. I must go to the gym 5 to 6 times a week. It's very important for my self-care. I feel very rejuvenated every single time I hit the gym. So I try to go every day if I can, but definitely at least 5 to 6 days a week. Walking is something that is very important to me. So I would do that with my wife once every couple of days as well, as frequently as we can. Again, we got little kids, so it's not as frequent as I would like to. So it's not daily, but I would say it's about 2-3 times a week that I really, really enjoy. So these are some simple self-care practices. I'm also really big on listening to books. I don't read them as much as I used to, but there's always a book in my ear. You can say pretty much at least 20 minutes a day. Like this year I've listened to 36 books. I was just observing it the other day. That's much how much I listen to books.
I love listening to books. Audiobooks are great. So yeah, they're wonderful too.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. The second wrap-up question we ask is, what does being courageous mean to you?
To me, being courageous is to take action despite the fear, if you have any.
Yeah.
Is to do things that are important to you.
Mm-hmm.
There's an instance in my life when I was going through that transition in my life where I was quitting everything and I had lost faith in myself and faith in my abilities to have a good life. And that time, courage really kicked in because I started doing things that were really scary, like bungee jump or skydive or scuba dive when you don't know how to swim. Stories for another day, but things that reminded me that I can do things and I can learn things, and that fear is a construct. It's not the truth.
Yeah, it is. Fear is a feeling, right? And feelings aren't facts. Things I remind myself of often. So the last question we ask is there a book that has meant something to you along your journey that you'd like to recommend to our audience?
Like I said, I read 36 books a year. It's a little hard to pick one. But the book that I often refer to that I think is very important, is a great book, is Think and Grow Rich, or Science of Getting Rich. That was definitely very important to me to become more abundant in my life.
Thank you. And if anyone wants to find you, follow you, work with you in the programs, where can they do all of that?
Well, because we are on a podcast, another podcast to add to your list would be the one that I run. It's very focused on coaching. It's called Master Coaching with Ajit. So you could always go and check that out and see if that's your vibe. If not, for this podcast sake, I'm giving away one of my books that I recently bought back from my publisher. It's called Live Big. It's subtitled as Entrepreneur's Guide to Passion, Purpose, and Practicality. So if you are an entrepreneur or somebody who wants to live a passionate life, I'll request Erica and Ali here to post that link in the show notes. It's a free download. You don't have to buy. I just bought the rights back so I can give it away to the world. So just click on the thing. It's a whole book. It was an Amazon bestseller when it came out. I just bought the rights back because I wanted to do something more meaningful with it.
Thank you so much. And thank you for your wisdom and for being here today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Courageous Wellness. Tune in every Wednesday for a new episode featuring a different guest each week. Subscribe, rate, and write us a nice review. And you can also follow us on Instagram at Courageous Wellness, or get in touch via our website, www.courageouswellness.net, where you can also find additional info about our health coaching services, virtual group events, newsletter, and more. Until next week, I'm Allie.
And I'm Erica, and we're Courageous Wellness.